Hi, I'm Rob Kendall, and this is the Front End Podcast.
The Front End Podcast explores the ins and outs of life as a developer. We delve into challenging topics around modern day development and technology, including learning, professional growth, programming languages, frameworks, tools, techniques, UX, UI, careers, and so much more. Joining us today is Emily. Emily is a front-end development and design specialist recruitment consultant with Oscar Technology. Welcome, Emily. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing in this this episode? Because of the way I record things, we're doing this on March the 18th, but this may be, it'll be posted a few weeks sort of later, but we are right in the thick of the COVID-19 coronavirus situation, and it has hit a lot of people very hard, and recruiters especially. How are you finding it?
It's changed overnight, a click of the fingers. Tomorrow could be a completely different day. No one really knows what's going on. We trialed today working from home. So today was my first experience being a remote recruiter, which was definitely different. And I think that if we do go into lockdown and this becomes the future for quite a while, that the recruitment industry is going to be going quite different. But business as usual. Some clients are halting recruitment, but then other clients are upscaling on things. The market is going in a different direction, but it's definitely still there.
I think what's been nice to see is I've seen a few things on LinkedIn where people have said, please don't be put off by applying for jobs or trying to recruit people for them. And a lot of companies seem to have switched into doing like remote interviews, whether that's through Slack or Zoom and things like this. And that's quite interesting that people have managed to keep it going, even though those positions maybe weren't kind of remote originally. They've switched the recruitment process. So have you found it's hampered you significantly, or it's just kind of people have just adapted fairly well?
Yes, well, so I think a lot of companies already had quite a lot in place for these situations, and a lot of companies do things remote nowadays. We have access to video platforms through Oscar, but a lot of clients I've been finding already have access to this, and they've not been put off at all in their processes. So I've got jobs at the moment that half the interviews have been done face-to-face and the other half have been done now through video platforms, and it's put no candidates at a disadvantage, and it's not really changed much at all. So potentially this is going to be the future post-COVID-19 of the way recruitment can be and business could be in general. So I'm thinking probably quite a lot of positivity will come from it, a lot of companies being a lot more open to remote working.
Yeah, that's hopefully, because I mean, it certainly shouldn't, you know, I know some companies struggle with like full remote kind of and that shift, because I think it is a bit of a mind shift, a mindset shift and a culture shift. And, you know, to do it, it's not as easy as, well, we have Microsoft Teams or we have Slack, so we can kind of set that up. How have you found working remote? I would imagine part of your job is kind of remote anyway, and that you're dealing with, say, people like me as a candidate through like phone calls or maybe things like that. So is it really, have you found it quite odd doing more kind of working from home?
Yeah, definitely. And just not being in that office environment. And well, I specialize in front end, but we niche for a reason, because it makes us obviously a lot better at what we do. I have next to no knowledge really on the back end, and just having my colleague next to me who has the exact same location as me, we're working with the exact same clients, and it makes it a lot more difficult, because we all bounce different things off of each other, and it makes the whole process in a recruitment office is there's a lot of collaboration amongst each other. And not having that human interaction, it will take a lot of getting used to, definitely.
Do you have any advice for people in the job market now, both, you know, I suppose from the hiring company side of it and the job seekers on kind of handling searches and hiring during a difficult period like this, which is quite unique, I think. We've not seen anything like this before.
Everyone's worrying. I've had my worries, and I'm sure everyone has for their own different reasons. But one thing my CEO has just repeatedly told us, it's a health crisis, not a financial crisis. And the economy is going to take a huge hit for this, but the work is there. And so they're going to still need the work, whether it's now or whether it's later on down the line when they need the project again or they kickstart it again. And I think that now is probably more than anything one of the best times to to be getting on a job search, because if they're hiring right now, they need you more than ever. Your skills are needed because they're still recruiting for that position in a time like this. And so you know that you'll be valued, job is secure, needed more than ever, and what you're doing is actually going to be such a fundamental part of the business. And then for a lot of other companies, putting things on hold or having flexible start dates, it's on both times one of the best times to just lock in jobs and lock in the best candidates. The top talent's out there and the work is still there, whether it's now or it's in the future. And that's just the way that we're going to go forward with it all.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's you know, it's great advice. I think, yeah, just basically don't fear the COVID and just keep going.
Yeah, it's all still there. It's just, we're all just doing it from the comfort of our homes now. And that's just what I think people need to remember.
Now, a big part of what we do on this show is we'd like to talk about origin stories, no matter who we get on, whether it's how did you get in development or recruitment. And I had a little bit of a look around on your profile on LinkedIn and saw that you did a degree in philosophy and politics.
Yeah.
And I always like people who start out with something completely random and then end up in a completely different place. So how did you go from philosophy and politics and get into front-end recruitment?
So philosophy and politics, I think a lot of people do humanities because they enjoyed it, did it college and school, and it's just a route you go down when you don't particularly know what you're going to be doing after uni. And I still didn't know, and I did a lot of traveling in between finishing and then ending up in recruitment, and I almost fell into it. I knew about it, friends that had done it, friends that had really succeeded in it, and it stands out as being one of the best progressive industries to go into after you finish uni. Yeah, fell into it and ended up with the market that I've gotten. I've absolutely loved it. I just love working with the people that I'm working with, and the market, it's such a good market to be in. And my location that my market's in as well, is Yorkshire in the northeast, and I went to uni in York as well. So it's such a nice excuse to go up there quite often and network with clients and candidates. It was never a plan, it just happened.
I had a couple of recruiters from the kind of London region on to talk about kind of, you know, similar topics. And they said something very similar. You know, they kind of fell into it. Someone started with an accountancy degree and then went, yeah, this isn't for me, I want to do something else, but they really like people. And it seems to be one of the big draws to get into recruitment is that you get all of the kind of excitement and thrills and drive that you get with sales without kind of as much of the harshness, because people, I think, actually want your services. Like, you're not cold calling them where you just get angry people on the phone a lot. You've got both the company side who want to get a person to do the job, and you want the job seekers who want to do that job. So you must get, it must be, I suppose, quite a nice sales environment to work in.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm the least salesy person going in. Everyone says that about me in the office. Love my job, I'm good at what I do, but I sit there with my cup of tea, my heater, my electric heater by me, blanket round me. I'm not salesy. Most people probably can imagine a recruitment office and they're up and down Wolf of Wall Street, but no. And I think that's why I love the company that I work at as well. Everyone has come from a different background, doing different things, wanting different things out of their career. And I'd probably say more than half of my office are just not your typical salesy people, which inspires you a lot in what you do.
I was just going to say, I think most people have that image of like recruitment flaws, just like the Wolf of Wall Street, but just like, get me that job now. Now, you're relatively fresh to the recruitment scene.
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying. And obviously, I would imagine that this coronavirus is probably one of the biggest changes you or anyone else is likely to see. But in that time, like pre-COVID-19, you know, what kind of changes have you seen, if any, sort of, you know, whether it's a shift to different technologies or like an upsurge in particular jobs and resource hunting? What kind of big changes have you seen in that time?
I mean, from when I've been starting, the market for the past 6 months has been, it's been a really good market being on the front end to be in. I think very recently, there's been a lot of jobs and not enough top candidates for the positions, with the rise of things like North Coders and a lot of junior developers, brilliant junior developers, went out and they're all skilled in React. A lot of companies are shifting their front-end platforms to be focused on developing using React. And there's not enough of that in between developers to be able to mentor these juniors and lead over these juniors. And it's been quite a struggle with that I found. But I bounce off quite a lot with my manager, who she does front-end in Manchester, and she's been in the market for absolutely years now. And she said that the biggest change is this, surge in React. Everyone's going down that route. And yeah, the market recently, it's been a really good time to be in it.
That's interesting, because I do try and monitor those kind of things. And I see a lot of questions. There was one the other day about, you know, companies looking to build this new bit of whatever and debating whether to go with Vue or React. And then they were asking for kind of opinions, which is like opening the door to a nightmare. It's just loads of developers coming along going, it should use this one. It's the best. And there is no best. I keep saying this all the time, but the best one is whatever you want to work with that helps you be more efficient and produce good code.
But
I also, because I do kind of mentoring through a coding coach platform, which is just brilliant and puts you in touch with a lot of aspiring developers. And that's interesting that you said there's a bit of a gap there between maybe junior developers coming up. So if you were going to advise people to get a specific skill set, would you advise going with maybe skilling up on something like React or focusing on like the fundamentals?
People are looking to self-teaching themselves and not go down the route of a coding course, because it can be such an expense. I think the skill set that they're teaching them is for a reason. Going down the React route is definitely the way that front ends go in. I think as a junior candidate, having learnt those skills, particularly in React, what we always say, what's going to make you stand out is just being different, having things that make you stand out, stand apart, extra things you've done, just making yourself look different to every single other candidate that's coming out of these courses, because they all come out with relatively sort of the same CV, and then there's not much that makes them stand apart. And I think definitely though, the React route, it's what they've all got, but it's the way that most companies are going down, so that's where the work's going to be.
And specifically with juniors, I mean, everyone needs sort of help with their job search, and that's why you guys, you know, exist, and that's why I think recruiters are, you know, they get a lot of stick, but I think the good ones, you know, they are more than a necessary evil. They're very good because they facilitate that kind of back and forth between you and an employer, and I might end up in the bin. I'm sure I've ended up in plenty of hiring bins in my time, and because you don't have that middleman to really kind of get you that second look. But especially for junior or inexperienced or aspiring developers, is there anything they can do to make themselves stand out in, because I imagine, like you said, with being junior, you don't have the experience maybe to fall back on, so you do risk looking a bit more like a number, like a lot of other junior developers. What can they do specifically to, you know, stand out?
Most of the time, most recruiters probably won't say this, but your big massive companies like Barclays, BBC, if you want a job there, you don't need a recruiter to go and get them. That there's so many junior jobs out there. But again, like you're asking the question, what is it that stands out? It's portfolios, it's extra work you've done. My manager told me a story recently, actually, of a candidate she'd met with once who'd got a job at Pretty Little Thing. Junior developer, he'd come out of his course and he'd noticed something. He really wanted a job there, and he noticed something on the website with clicking something into the basket. There was a little glitch, and he broke it apart, did all the recoding. He was like, this is what I'll do, this will fix this will fix that, sent it off. And I mean, you can't not give him the job. He's going to fix the glitch. And obviously that, out of someone who's probably gone and done their degree, done a placement year, done a bit of commercial experience, that junior CV, just coming out of the coding course and gone out of your way and done this extra thing that shows that you've got the drive to learn, the commitment, the passion for doing what you're doing, that will be the candidate that stands out by a mile.
Yeah, I like that story of a bit. It's almost borderline ethical hacking. I like it without actually going as far as hacking in that system. Oh, but I like that. It's up there with those people who send like little gift baskets ahead of time to companies with like their photo and a little, hey, this is from me. I recently had a couple of recruiters on, and I think, you know, we're trying to get to the heart of the benefits of engaging with the recruiter, but, you know, from both sides as a company and a candidate. And I think, you know, I did put a few words into their mouth a little bit. So, I mean, this time, could you explain a little about why recruiters are a good thing and how candidates and companies, you know, can really improve their hiring by engaging with them?
everyone, I can imagine everyone's probably had a bad experience with a recruiter at some point, and it happens. But the main thing is finding a recruiter that just works for you, that gets you, understands what you want, gets to know you before even talking to you about a position. Because we say, how can you talk to someone about a position if you don't know what it is that they want?
Yeah.
But yeah, find a recruiter that will get to know you, will understand you, will know what gets you ticking development, but then will know what you had for dinner last night, where are you going on holiday next, all of that. And then if you've still got any worries, say to them, well, do you want to meet me for a coffee if they're local? If they'll go out of their way at the office to meet you, then you know that they're a good one, definitely, because they're making that effort to go meet you. And once you've got that trust with that one, then, I mean, I've had candidates who have placed who said they'd never work with another recruiter. And some of my other colleagues have got that as well. You have the people that come back because they work with you once and you've built that trust, you've got that relationship. They know what you want out of a job and out of your career. And I think thinking about your career as a long term, working with the recruiters is so beneficial on a candidate end, and also throughout the process and the back and forth. A recruiter will be able to negotiate an offer in a way that a candidate going through the process organically wouldn't be able to do, just naturally, because we have the market knowledge. You might not be able to say to a client, oh, well, I know that actually barely anyone else in the market at the moment has the skills that I have and experience I have at the salary I want. A candidate just naturally would probably never know that, whereas we would. And I think when it comes down to factors like that, from a candidate side, it does bode a lot more in your favour in the opportunities and when it comes to offer stages as well.
I think another point that really never gets discussed is about kind of safeguarding or kind of preparing for the future. You know, there's probably people listening to this or sat out of work thinking, well, I'm really happy. I could spend the next 10 years here, and that's fine. And I've worked with people who've worked in places for sort of 25 years plus, and they're happy as a clam. However, I also, like last year, felt the strike from the kind of redundancy hammer. I was at a company for 5 weeks and they just entirely wiped the development team out overnight.
Oh, no.
No one was expecting it. We just sort of rocked up on a Thursday, like, yeah, let's do some React. And it was like, actually, I'd rather just go home and never come back.
What a nightmare. You've only just started.
It was, yeah. But I mean, fortunately for me, I found another job, the one I'm in now, in about 2.5 days, I think it was. And that is not because I'm some kind of legendary coder that people clamber for, but I think it's because I've always tried to foster those relationships. You know, I take time to speak to recruiters, even if I'm not even remotely looking at a job. I'll take those 5-10 minutes and just sort of, you know, make the connections, because then when you do need help, that you can leverage that and say, well, look, now I am on the market. Keep stuff up to date as well. I always have an up-to-date CV or LinkedIn profile, and there's developers I know where they're like, oh, well, some of the ones from last year, you know, they were like, oh, I've worked here for sort of 5 years. Now I'm stuck. And they had to spend ages kind of updating profiles and CVs and then kind of then putting themselves out there. And you are at that point quite an unknown quantity. So I suppose maintaining those relationships as well makes it much easier.
It's really useful. Like, so you found a job in 2.5 days. It takes the pressure off in situations like that, and it's a shame, and it's really hard times that a lot of people are probably, a lot of people are already being made redundant with the current situation, and it takes the pressure off. It's the last thing you want to do, getting on a job search. We do it full time, all day, resort, like working to get you a job. So for us, 2.5 days, we're working on it full time. It takes the pressure off, it speeds it up, and it makes that whole situation just a little bit lighter for people. And I think in the times that we're in at the minute, a lot of people are probably going to look to turn to a recruiter if they're made redundant, because it's not just the stresses of being made redundant, but it's the stresses outside of that with the obviously current situation of this crisis.
When people are looking for roles and things, I mean, how can candidates help you to help them? Because I presume you must work with some some difficult ones here and there.
In terms of how they would be able to help us, is tell us absolutely everything, even if it's the longest list of requirements of exactly what you want, how flexible you'll be, if you can't be flexible at all. That helps us. Well, I know it helps me, because it makes sure that all the roles that I scope out for a particular candidate I know would be suitable, so I don't feel like wasting any time. And I think it's just transparency on both ends. And I know a lot of candidates worry that recruiters aren't being transparent, and so they themselves don't want to be. Definitely transparency is key, and that's what helps the process the most.
And when it comes to CVs, again, it's another one of those things where everyone's got a different bit of advice, and there's lots of articles, but it seems to be, and there is no magic formula, because at the end of the day, you're putting some kind of, you know, document together that represents you, and you're giving it to someone else, and there's an awful lot of subjectivity in there. But specifically with CVs, I mean, you guys have a bit more of an insight into kind of how they're seen and vetted. Do you have any advice for people that are either looking to put a good CV together or improve their existing CV? What makes a killer CV?
I mean, nowadays, I probably know more than, depending on how long your career history is, I wouldn't say no longer than three pages, because it just begins to be so lengthy. And a lot of the times, if it's just a Word document, we reprocess it in a certain way so that they're all standardized. But if someone sends a CV and PDF that they've added their own flair to, that they've made it their own, that always stays the same, because like that's something that you'd never be able to format into a certain way, because that is that own person's individual CV. And again, it's like about standing out. You want a CV to stand out and show what you're about, then yeah, definitely add a bit of flair to your CV. But lengthwise, yeah, no more than four pages. Is anything more than four pages, it's becoming perhaps War and Peace.
trim it down, add stickers, it goes down well. You touched on a benefit that I think that is sometimes missed again about recruiters, is that if you have a CV and you just kind of spam it out to companies or just send it direct, you're kind of at the mercy of the other hiring people, and they're, you know, whether they like it or not, are going to be somewhat conditioned and subjective for certain things in certain CVs to stand out. And you mentioned about kind of if they go through a recruiter, you kind of standardize some of them. And is that one of the benefits you'd say of using a recruiter, is that you can, they act as a bit of a buffer, if you like, with CVs, so they can sort of go, I wouldn't put that in, or I'd maybe put something else in, or could you expand on this, and help you submit the kind of best version of your CV to things that you're applying for?
Yeah, of course. Well, I would never, I know no one I work with would ever change someone's CV, but if I'd had a conversation with them and they were specifically looking for an Angular position, say, and they hadn't touched, and they'd had stack loads of focused Angular experience in their work, but they hadn't explained much about it within their CV, I'd definitely get back to them and perhaps say, oh, well, maybe you could add a bit more in this, or do you want to send me a bit of a paragraph explaining the work that you've done with Angular and where you've used it and how you've used it? And then we could maybe like add that into your CV. So it's just, I think if someone's looking for something specifically or focused in a specific framework, then in that case, we'd work together on creating a CV that's best tailored to that position.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think, I don't know what it is with CVs. They're one of those, I think you either fall into two camps of the people I've met. They're either like me and they like really overthink it. Just don't get anywhere. You're constantly going, is this good? Is this the best version? Or they're just really kind of half-assed and they're just like, oh, that'll do. You just put jobs and dates in there.
Yeah.
And off they go. Now, we do like, you know, everyone likes the juicy sort of horror stories and gossip. Do you have any kind of candidate horror stories or even client? Oh, we probably can't talk about client horror stories, but do you have any kind of candidate horror stories? Even if it's just a please don't do this as a candidate.
No, I'm trying to think now. Put me on the spot with that one.
It's probably good if you don't have any.
No, well, I mean, I don't have any awful ones. Yeah, sometimes it's difficult ones when you have difficult clients and it reflects badly on you and people don't get happy. But no, I've never particularly, no horror story from my end. Sorry to disappoint. I feel like, yeah, no, definitely put on the spot. I'm trying to think if anyone in my office that, quite a funny one. One of my, not so much a horror story, a colleague of mine, a candidate, had obviously wrote her a cover letter and tailored it specifically to her and the role that she was recruiting for, and then never took it off their CV, and her cover letter tailored to her was all over the job board. Dear Mrs. so-and-so, So that was quite a cracker for a while in the office every time we were seeing her name cropping up as a candidate. But no horror stories, really. I think that, yeah, we work with lovely candidates and we're all lovely people. So sometimes there's some funny stories, but no horror story.
No, that's probably good. It probably just means you're working with a good caliber of people. For instance, the other episode, they had a horror story in there about a candidate that had kind of interviewed really well up until the point he actually physically went in, like the telephone. I think it was the initial kind of telephone and the tech test and stuff. But it sounded like he basically got someone else to do it for him, and then it kind of eventually just horribly fell apart at the interview stage. Again, don't do that if you're a candidate, because eventually you'll get found out. Unless you end up in some position where you work for a massive company and you can really fly under the radar, people will notice when you say, "Yeah, I can code," and then you just obviously can't. So probably don't do that.
Yeah, no, what a nightmare. No, don't go catfishing, because it will be found out at some point.
And what about from the, because I mean, obviously we've talked a lot about candidates and, you know, that's where obviously a lot of focus might fall. But from a company's point of view, do you have any recommendations or advice for companies looking to hire the best tech? Obviously, apart from, you know, use yourself as a recruiter, that's just a given. But in terms of, you know, whether how they can improve their hiring process, or just some things, some maybe red flags or things to watch out for during their hiring process.
If there are red flags, you initially have gut instincts, and watch out for people that have maybe switched jobs quite a lot or just things that don't add up. I always say they're the biggest red flags, but that's again what you use recruiters for, because we get to the nitty gritty of why they're asking for that salary or why they've got those jumps in their CV. Because an internal talent team for a lot of companies, under a lot of pressure for recruiting, not just across, because I do IT recruitment, not just across IT recruitment, across the whole company. And a lot of the time it's just shortlisting CVs. And so they might automatically see these red flags and not even take it any further. And that could be the candidate that is perfect for the job and gets the job. So I think definitely using a recruiter is ideal to clear those red flags up for you and really go into detail with vetting every single candidate.
Do your due diligence. Try saying that three times fast. We've covered an awful lot, and I think, you know, that's been some great hints and tips and help on the kind of the state of the market. And I think anything, even if it's like a small thing that can just help people improve their chances of being hired. Thank you for coming on and talking to us.
Oh no, thank you for having me.
No, anytime. I ask this of everyone at the end. Is there anything that you'd like to, anything else you'd like to plug or mention? I'll ask Emily to send me all the things she wants, and I'll put them in the show notes, so there's nice clickable links. But yeah, have you got any kind of plugs, anything to big up?
I just think everyone just at the moment, yeah, everyone just stick together, band together, don't worry. Some things, naturally, some industries are going to really struggle during this time, but a lot of industries and a lot of clients I'm already speaking to are scaling up and still either business as usual or really thriving. So just look after yourselves, all stick together, and turn to a recruiter whether you are on a job search or you've been made redundant, or you want to start having a chat with a recruiter prior to when things just start to calm down, or even just the market knowledge. I usually always say that I have an open diary for going meeting up for a coffee, but I still have an open diary, but it'll have to be a virtual coffee from here on out.
We had something on the last episode where it was like, yeah, conferences are great, go to conferences, but not right now. Just when everything calms down, go to them later.
Yeah, at a later date.
You can find Emily on LinkedIn. She's, if you just do a search for Emily Beachaw, and you can find her company that she works for, Oscar Technology. They are at Oscar Recruit on Twitter, or oscar-tech.com on the old internet. Thank you very much for coming, Emily. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully speak to you again.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. You too. Take care.
So that's it for this episode. Do consider subscribing and give us a like or a share on social media. Speaking of which, if you'd like to follow the show, we're available on Twitter at Frontend Podcast. You can follow me, Rob Kendall, on Twitter too, at Kendall Mint Code. If you'd like to find out more about the show, sponsor an episode, or be a guest, you can find out more on the dedicated website, thefrontendpodcast.site.